Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the R word equals recession when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, or multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush, our president, said that what Americans want, though, is jobs, jobs, jobs. But, you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's not in jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of the Old Covenant contract, and then collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's called property, instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Home School for Adults. It's called our Business School. And while you're at it, why don't you ask for our free General Law CD package at the same time? That free General Law CD package is a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. You can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Or you can go to our telephone number, which is 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, we're talking about the R word, recession. Alan Greenspan used it the other day, and the stock market went down precipitously, and then they blamed that on the Chinese. I'm not quite sure if the Chinese are at fault, or Alan Greenspan, or just fiat paper money in general. But you know, our president keeps telling us that the economy is strong, the economy is vibrant, the economy is growing. Oh, yeah? Well, I don't know. I told you last time I took a look at the Dow Jones, and I wouldn't get out of bed for what they're offering. Now, of course, I'm probably not as smart as most of you people out there. You know, most of you people have, you know, degrees and from college, and you've got letters after your name, and you make a lot of money. And, hell, I live below the poverty line, for crying out loud. I don't even make $18,000 a year, which is the poverty line. But I didn't know I was in poverty, and I'm an old man. I'm not drawing Social Security. I'm doing well enough to stay off the dole. You know, not a whole lot better, but, you know, a little bit. Well, anyway, my president keeps telling me that the economy is strong, vibrant, and growing, but I noticed that there are budget deficits and have been for the past 75 years. If you boys and girls would take a look at the number of times that the federal government, that is the United States of America, the federal government, has had a surplus at the end of the year, I think you can count them on one hand over 75 years. Every other year there's been a budget deficit. And that includes all eight of the Clinton years. Kids, the Clinton people over there took the money out of Social Security and called that a surplus. That's well, okay, I guess you could do that. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, you're making $50,000 a year, and $5,000 of that goes into your IRA. So, in the last year, what you did was, in order to balance your budget and make all of your payments, you took the $5,000 out of your IRA, and when you finished up the year, you had $400 left over. And you said, now you see, we balanced our budget last year. Looks like to me you balanced your budget by taking the money out of your savings. But then, you know, I guess if that's what you want to do, you can do it. Well, anyway, we haven't had very many budget surpluses. Looks like to me, you know, that if you spend more money than you take in, your business ain't doing too good. Just from an old fart, you know, from the olden days when we used to count, you know, on both hands. And then when we needed a little extra, you know, we take off our boots and count on our toes. Well, I might be counting on my toes and I might be counting on my fingers, kids, but I made more money last year than Ford. That's right. The Gordon Law School made more money last year than Ford and General Motors combined. Counting on my fingers and toes. Now, of course, those boys, they got a lot of economists working for them. And you know, they've got the government and government doles, and they got all kinds of things out there working for them, but they lost a lot of money last year. All right. Now, the budget deficits over the past 75 years would be a signal to me that the economy is not strong, not vibrant, and not growing. The balance of payments deficit, boys and girls, topped $800 billion last year. That means that America, we Americans, didn't put on enough tariffs to collect enough money to pay all those foreigners for all that stuff that we bought. Didn't budget enough money by tariffs. I guess you must have some other methodology for paying that. I don't know what it is. But in the olden days, when I was a kid, we used to count that as a loss. And that's not good. When your business is spending more money on capital goods than it is producing in consumer goods, then you are losing money. And the United States of America has been losing money now for a long time. That does not send a signal to me that the economy is strong, the economy is vibrant, and the economy is growing. Real wages have not gone up since 1973. Now, my real wages have gone up since 1973, but on average, they haven't. And purchasing power has been going down. Now, my purchasing power has been going up since 1973. Well, it actually didn't get started in 73 because I was still dealing in commercial paper as recently as 1984. And then one day, somebody gave me a lesson. The guy's name was A.J. Porth. He gave me a lesson in checks, and my life hadn't been the same since. I thought every year I was making more money, and I was counting my money in absolute terms. And Americans have been doing that since 1973. See, in 73, when you were making $5 an hour, you measure that $5 an hour next to the $16.57 an hour that you're getting today, which is the average or the median pay scale. Half the people make over that, half the people make under that. And you're making $16.57 an hour, and you're comparing that with $5 in 1973. What you don't count in here or haven't figured in is that it costs more than $16.57 to equal what $5 would buy back in 1973. See? And you're not adding that in. And you have to add that in if you want to come up with an equal. You know, if you want to equal 1973. So, that doesn't sound like to me that the economy is strong, the economy is vibrant, and the economy is growing. And then there was another thing here that set me off and put my teeth on edge here. 50% of our food now comes from overseas. I can remember when 57% of our table vegetables came out of California. I remember that number. And now I find that because we're importing brie cheese from France, berries from Guatemala, and grapes from Chile, and the other day I happened to be in the Sam's store over there, and there was some Cabernet Sauvignon wine from Chile. See, we used to buy all of our wine from Napa Valley and from New York and places here in the United States. No. Now we buy it, for all you wine growers out there, because we can import Cabernet Sauvignon wine from Chile and sell it retail for $9 a bottle. Why should I pay $15 a bottle for your Napa Valley wine, you wine growers out there? My God, let's hear it for free trade. Gotta love it. I love free trade. So does Walmart. How that benefits America's economy is beyond me, being an old man and all. But I just thought I'd report on that for you. Now, it's not just wine. It's everything that we buy over here. And that's why we have so many of our jobs being outsourced. Because, you know, pretty soon the wine growers in Napa Valley are going to figure out they can't make it there. So they're going to go buy some ground in Chile, and then they'll produce their wine down in Chile, and then they'll import it into the United States. I'm not sure who they're going to sell this wine to. You take a look now at the numbers, and it's starting to add up. See, you don't have enough people to sell it to. And that's why we've been in recession in this country for 18 months, and the government is hiding it from you. So I thought I'd expose it. I'm going to tell you. Your economy has been in recession, it's in recession, and it's going to get worse from here. So if you think that the economy is growing and that the economy is strong and vibrant, you're not paying attention to reality, kids. 5 million jobs have been outsourced over the past 6 years. Now, that's what they admit to. I don't know if it's more than that or not. 5 million jobs. Now, the manufacturing sector of our economy in 1960 employed 63% of the workforce and accounted for 63% of our economy. Today it's 13%. It's down by 50 percentage points. So that's counting the entire economy. I don't think that sending a steel mill to Taiwan or South Korea or China is good for America. Now, maybe I'm wrong, see? And all of you smart kids out there are going to college and learning about world government and free trade and communism, one thing and another. Hey, listen, I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success, but as I pointed out over the past series of programs on health, there's no free lunch here. And if you break the law, then you're going to have bad health. And if you break economic laws, then you're going to have poverty. Poverty. And I would contend that wealth is better than poverty. And I think you're going to enjoy it more. It's like I told you in the last program. You'll have more fun burning up airplane gas, lighting Roy Tan cigars, and drinking Jack Daniel's sipping whiskey than you will, you know, being poor, struggling to make ends meet, going through bankruptcy, or losing your home in the next foreclosure cycle. I think that you're going to enjoy wealth more than poverty. But then, no, don't let me get in the way of your experimentation here. These 5 million jobs that have been outsourced now came from the manufacturing industry primarily, not all of them, but primarily. But now, you know, when we thought that our service industry jobs were safe, we find that H&R Block is outsourcing their accounting work to India. And now when you take your numbers into the local office, they put them on the web. They send it over to India. Some guy working for $2 a day does it over there, sends it back over here. H&R Block collects the same amount of money from you. But instead of spending, you know, $20 an hour paying some accountant or economist here in the United States, they're paying $2 to some guy over in India. It makes all the sense in the world for H&R Block to do that. And God bless the internet and God bless satellite communications and the cell phones and all the technology that goes with it that makes all of that possible. But again, I don't see how that makes it good for the guys that work here in the United States. It's good for India, good for China, good for Bangladesh and the Philippines. I don't deny it. But is it good for you in New York and California and Texas? Now, our president says it's wonderful. Okay, stick with the program. You like it? Stick with it. They tell us that 20 million Mexicans in the United States is a good thing and that we ought to have more of them. Hey, listen, if you think 20 million Mexicans working in the United States is a good thing, wouldn't 40 million be twice as gooder? Hell, if 40 million is twice as good as 20 million, why don't we bring all the Mexicans up here? There's about 100 and some odd million of them. Bring them all. I always figured, you know, if a little bit's good, twice as much has got to be twice as gooder, and double that's even better yet. Now, if you think that, well, maybe that isn't so good. Well, if bringing all of them up here isn't so good, why is bringing half of them up here half as good? Why is bringing any of them up here good? Good for Mexicans, good for Mexico, bad for us. Now, I'll let you decide what you want to do. I don't think I'm going to change anything by reporting that to you. I just thought that I'd share with you a couple of wild, odd facts over here, and then I'd point that out, that in Bible prophecy, you know, your God told you, he said, now I'm going to lean on you people in Leviticus 26, and I'm going to bring war upon you, and disease, and pestilence, and economic hardship. And I'm gonna break the pride of your power. He uses that term. He says, I'm gonna break the pride of your power. Now, manufacturing represents 13% of our economy versus 63% back in 67. The consumer price index that we receive every month from our government is a lie. It's a lie. And that's because the CPI, that's the Consumer Price Index, based upon the 1990 modality, shows that we've got 6% inflation in this country right now using the hedonic 1990 numbers. It got worse with the Clinton years. The CPI, based upon the modality that we were using back in 1980, shows that we've got 10% inflation, which is just about where 10.9% is. The CPI today shows that we've got 1.4% inflation. Based upon the modality from 1980, shows we got 10% inflation. The M3 was discontinued, so you can't know what the inflation rate is, but new money coming into circulation today is 10%. In fact, sometimes it goes as high as 12%. I mean, boys and girls, that they're printing more and more money. So you've got nominal growth. It is true, your economy's growing. No doubt about it. But you're not producing any more widgets. You're producing fewer and fewer widgets and charging more and more money. And that's why your jobs are being outsourced to China. You got nominal growth, but you don't have actual growth. Did you know that? Well, now you do, because I just told you. Now, contraction is called recession, and the economy is contracting by 8 percentage points a year and has been for 18 months. So that means we're in a recession, been in it for 18 months, but your government says, oh, no, you're not suffering from a recession. You actually got growth at 1.4%, and the economy is strong, vibrant, and growing. The economy isn't strong, tisn't vibrant, tain't growing, and you're being lied to. All right, now I've told you the bold-faced facts, and so that'll make me real popular in Poughkeepsie. Now, a lot of times people write to me and they say, you know, you're a downer. I'm a downer. I told you last time, I said, I think that bad news is good news, and I love bad news. And that's because the bad news points me in the direction of reality. Reality. As old Dan Rather used to call it, a reality check. You know, let's have a reality check here and see if this really squares. The other day I was reading a piece, and there's a lot of people that are leaving the United States, going to India. And if you're making $60,000 a year in San Francisco, California, today, listening to my voice today, you're pulling down 60 grand a year. You can go to India, you'll make $10,000 a year, and you will live twice as well in India on $10,000 than you will in San Francisco on $60,000. And that's because there's less tax to pay. Less tax. That's because you can buy food, clothing, and shelter cheaper in India than you can in San Francisco, California. Instead of $2,000 a month rent, you'll be paying maybe $50 or $75 a month rent on $10,000 of income. And when you do the percentages, now I know this is going to be real tricky for you people that have been to college, but there's a thing that we call percentage. Percentage. And when we use percentages, it gives us an indication as to where we were, where we are, and where we're going. So, a lot of times, making one-sixth the amount of money can produce a standard of living that's double or twice what you've got today. And I've told people that many times. See, you can take your Social Security check and move down to Mexico, and you can live two or three times as well in Mexico on that kind of money. For instance, today, if I was on the dole, I could get $805 a month on my Social Security. Probably it's up around $1,200 a month now. I don't know exactly. I've checked with them, you know, for a few years, but to see what I could have got or what the new levels are. But let's suppose that it's $1,000 a month just to, you know, round it off. Boys and girls, that's $12,000 a year. Well, and that's Starvationville here in America. $12,000 a year in the United States. I mean, you're starving. $12,000 a year in Mexico, you're living the high life. Boys and girls, you can live better on $12,000 a year at Lake Chapala outside Guadalajara, Mexico, than you ever lived in the United States of America when you were pulling down $3 an hour in 1968. So, you know, if you want to stretch your money, in fact, a lot of Europeans, you know, a lot of people that came to this country and made their money, when they retired and they got off on Social Security and found out that Crown Zillerbach's retirement program went upside down and that prices are continually going up, hell, they went back to Romania, they went back to Bulgaria, they went back to Poland, and they live better over there, drawing their Social Security checks. They'll mail them to you. Hell, Social Security will mail you your check in Mexico, Chile, Costa Rica, Portugal, any place you want to go. China, India. And you can live better over there. I thought I'd report that to you while we're talking about R for the recession word over here, because it might save your life, might do you some good. Well, at least for a little while anyway. Now, for the rest of us over here that need to face reality, here in the real world, you know, you're not retired yet. You're like me. You're out here working every day, like I am. And you got to make ends meet. It means you got to pay the bills and you keep the bill collectors away from you. Thought I'd share with you a little story here that came from the Money Changer. This is from the November 2006 issue. It's a few months old, but I keep all of these Money Changer stories here because sometimes I like to share them with you. It's called Ugly Investing. The spread is the key. And then this guy, Franklin Sanders, he's an ugly investor. He's not chicing up date and buying stocks and bonds like everybody else is, because the Dow Jones Industrial Average is going up and it's at 12,000 and headed for 13 or 14 or 15. And this is before, you know, the Dow Jones, you know, took its swoon here the other day. But he says, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a pretty woman your wife. Go for my personal point of view. Get an ugly girl to marry you. Well, back in the 1960s, philosopher Jimmy Soule gave forth the wisdom above, and it remains as true today as it was back then. In fact, it's one of the timeless, fundamental truths of investing. What? You say you've never heard of it? Well, then let me explain. You remember how it was back in high school? Everybody swarmed around the glamour girl. Therefore, your chances of getting a date with her were from the beginning pretty much zero. But when you were in high school, you were too green to understand that you probably didn't want to date with that girl anyway. She probably wasn't your type, and besides, what did she look like underneath all that makeup? And how did she stack up against the other girls? More often than not, the ugly girls, once you'd learned to look for substance, weren't near as ugly as you thought they were. Now that brings us to the point of ugly investing. You know, investing isn't one bit different. What does everybody want to buy? Everybody wants to buy the hot investment that everybody's talking about. The one that old Joe made 30% on last year. The one that everybody knows will keep going up forever, like real estate. Secondly, what does it look like under all that makeup? Here's the underlying presupposition of everything that I write, and that is, what is its real value? We're not talking about the nominal value here, but what is its real value? Will it gain or will it lose value against other investments? Now, here's a quick example. Lately, stock investors have been crowing about the Dow Jones Industrial Average topping 12,000. Wow, that's really great. Well, let's take off the makeup, and then let's see what 12,000 on the Dow really is in real value. Not nominal value, but real value. The Dow Jones Industrial Average in January 2000 hit a high of 11,722. Well, in 2005 terms, the Dow would have to reach 13,784 just to pull even with the 2000 value. So to reach the equivalent purchasing power of $2,000, the Dow would have to reach 12,000. You know, that's around where you're at in 2000. That's rounded off to 12,000. Today, the Dow would have to be at 14,500 to equal the 12,000 back in 2000. Can you follow that, kids? But the Dow isn't at 14,500, is it? In fact, it hit 12,500 and then it fell back to about 12,000. So the Dow today is actually less than it was based upon the purchasing power compared with the year 2000, because inflation's gone up by 30%. So you have to have the Dow 30% higher, don't you? Can you follow that? That's what percentages are all about. It gives you a modality here for being able to compare, just taking a look at numbers. What do I have to have today compared to 2000? The answer is I got to have 30% more just to stay even. Now, if you're trying to make a profit over the last 6 years, you had to be doing something better than 30%. Now, that's what inflation does to us, and we'll take a look at the Mogambo here pretty shortly, in a day or two. And I'll show you what inflation is doing to you. And why it is so important to get out from underneath that inflation. And there's a solution to this inflation. See, I don't suffer from inflation, and that's because I don't deal in United States dollars. I don't deal in Federal Reserve Note dollars. Because if I did, I'd be suffering from inflation. So, you know, there's a thing in the Bible called just weights and balances. It's a wild new concept for all of you school kids out there. I understand that. But there was a time in America when we didn't have inflation in this country. No inflation. Zero inflation. And there is a time here in America in 2007 when you can participate in the American economy and suffer from no inflation, zero inflation. I'm not suffering from any inflation, zero, none, nada. I'm going to show you how to do that. And that's why I said in my opening today, I said business, business, business. Listen, I teach private business here. I don't have any degrees after my name, but kids, I'm not brain dead, and I can count. and I don't have a single stock. I don't have a single bond. And there isn't a single stock or a single, well, I shouldn't say that. There are some stocks and there are some bonds that will actually make you some money. But I don't know what they are. I couldn't find them with both hands at high noon with a road map, and I doubt if you could either. Now, I told you the last program, I said there are some stocks that have made some spectacular gains. But there's 95 or 9600 stocks out there, and your chances of picking the one or two stocks that have all these spectacular gains are pretty damn slim. And I don't see any reason to believe 30 years ago that Bill Gates was going to make $1 billion. There's a lot of stocks out there that look a whole lot more promising than the Gates stock looked 30 years ago, but, you know, there you are. There are some deals that have come down, you know, just like there's been some runs on the crap table. There was a run one time of 27 straight passes in Monte Carlo documented in the Guinness Book of Records. 27 straight passes. My God, can you imagine where you'd be today if you'd have put a dollar on the crap table, 27 straight passes, how much money you would have made? How often do you see 27 straight passes on a crap table? I saw 15 once, and I thought that was pretty phenomenal. 15 straight passes on a crap table at Jackpot, Nevada. 27's a record. Now, if you want to gamble, get after it. Hell, I'd recommend the crap table because the odds are better on a crap table than they are in the stock market. But, you know, you turn that around. You know, 12,000 today equals only 10,000 on the 2,000 stock market. Now, you can punch in the numbers for yourself. You go to the Minneapolis Fed. That's Minneapolis Fed. www.minneapolisfed.org, research data US CALC index CFM. I mean, there's a little bit to it there, but you know, hell, the Federal Reserve, you know, a lot of times they've got these numbers out there for you. All you got to do is access them. You can get the whole Dow Jones Industrial Average. You can get every single Dow Jones company, download it free off the internet. And just read it for yourself, as I say down at the Blue Room. Just read them and weep. They'll tell you. There isn't anything there that's worth having, as far as I can tell, anyway. All right, now I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Just ask for one. The number again, 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or management or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at area code 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're doing a little work here on the R word called recession. The world is headed toward recession. In fact, most of the conservative newsletter writers think that we're headed toward a massive deflation once we have completed the massive hyperinflation worldwide. It isn't just here in the United States, it's all over the world. The Chinese are suffering from it, the Japanese are suffering from it, the Americans are suffering from it, and we're going to suffer even more, as good old Mugambo would say. We are freaking doomed. I disagree with that. I think that there's a better solution to that, and I'll share that with you as we progress along, but I just wanted to point out that many of these newsletter writers are pretty disappointed or despondent. I think the word despondent might be apropos. I'm not quite that despondent. Looking at the money changer, here he goes on a step further. He says, ponder what happens when we take a look at the spread. What does the spread mean? Well, against gold, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has fallen 64%. In August of 1999, you needed 44.5 ounces of gold to buy the Dow. In May of 2006, you only needed 16 ounces. So the Dow, measured in gold, has since risen on November the 16th to $409.90 in gold, still down 55% from its 1999 high. If you have been holding the Dow, that is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, in gold, or rather stocks, instead of gold, you have been steadily losing value for the past 7 years. Let me pause right there and tell you the answer to that. If you'd have taken the same amount of money and invested it in gold that you have invested in stocks since 1999, you would be 56% more money ahead. Now, of course, somebody's going to say, "Yeah, but you know, then you'd have to pay taxes." That is true. There are some tax consequences when you deal in gold, but not nearly as much as there are when you deal in paper. And you can avoid the tax consequences in gold if you handle gold correctly. For instance, I haven't paid any income tax now since 1978. And I don't want you to run out here now and say, well, that guy Gordon now is a tax protester, doesn't pay taxes. And that's because I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and BD. I haven't had any income that exceeded the minimum, you know, the filing minimum since 1978. When I learned that trick, I stopped doing that. I used to pay a lot of money in taxes, you know. I used to get real excited about making a lot of income, paying a lot of tax. And then I found out how unprofitable it was, and so I quit doing that. The same thing is true now with stocks and bonds. Now, I never did get involved very much in stocks and bonds, but then when I found out how unprofitable they were, I quit. Now, I know they're touted, and I know that 51% of people have stocks. and 51% of people who have stocks lose money. Well, I'll put it this way, 100% of that 51% of people that have stocks lose money. Now, it isn't quite 100% because, you know, there's always going to be a few people that are making money. The brokers make money. But, you know, the average investor, the Joe Sixpacks like me and you, we don't make anything off those stocks. We pay our taxes. We buy real estate. You know, people that buy a house. Well, let me give you another little example. You probably, if you're like the normal person, you went out, you put $5,000 down on a $50,000 house, about 10%. Then you made your $300 a month payments for 360 payments, 30 years. And when you got all through, you said to yourself, well, gee, look at the profit I've made. The net loss on that transaction was $90,000 in purchasing power. In nominal value, you made a killing. But in real purchasing power, you lost your ass. That's the bottom line. Real estate makes money for some people. Most people in real estate lose money. Now, stocks, for some people, it makes money, but for most people, it loses money. The 51% of Americans that are invested in stocks, bonds, and real estate are losing money. They have to have jobs. They have to have employment, because if they didn't have it, they'd starve to death. And they take the money that they make off their employments, and they spend it on houses, stocks, and bonds. Now, I'm not opposed to you people spending your surplus money on stocks, bonds, and real estate. But stop calling it an investment. It's not an investment. What you're doing here is you're spending your money on a hobby. I used to do that with airplane gas. See, I bought an airplane, and I went out, and I filled it up with gasoline, and I took off and flew around, burned up all this excess money that I was making in airplane gas. I burned it up. And I just had a blast. I had a lot of fun. It was a great hobby. It's a great experience. You'll love it. And so is drinking whiskey. You'll love it. Whiskey's great stuff. You'll just love it. Smoking cigars is great stuff, but it doesn't make money. People that smoke cigars, drink whiskey, and fly airplanes aren't making money. They're indulging themselves in expensive hobbies. It's like collecting coins. You know, I'm a coin collector. You got to make money to collect coins. Collecting coins doesn't make money. It loses money. Costs money. It's an expensive hobby, like burning up airplane gas. Now, if you want to do that and call that an investment, I guess you can do that. You could go into Harrah's. You could buy $5,000 worth of chips, call it an investment, go over there and put it on the pass line. You know, it's just as good as stocks. Maybe a little better. I think the pass line's a little better than the stock market, you know, on average. And then there's real estate. You know, we've got the bubble has busted, you know, in real estate. In June of 2005, we reached the peak. And so here we are approaching June of 2007. You know, we're coming on to 2 years since we reached the peak. And it's going to be going downhill for the next 3 or 4 years. So if you think that real estate is the place for you to park your money, you know, get after it. I'm not an investment advisor. I'm not here to tell you where to put your money. I'm just here to tell you to report on where you've already lost your money. And if you want to lose some more, stick with it. All right, so he goes on, he tells us a little bit more. Silver's performance against stocks has been even stronger. Stocks peaked against silver on June 7th, 2001 at 2,566 ounces and then dropped for the next 5 years to 774 ounces on the 11th of May 2006. Stocks dropped 70% against silver in 5 years. They haven't recovered much. On the 16th of November, the Dow stood at 952 ounces of silver, still down 63%. Our strategy, which began in 2000, is working, and we're riding the primary trend, stocks down, silver and gold up, until the trend changes. Now, there might be a time when you might want to buy stocks. I have never seen that time, and as I reported to you, I think yesterday, I'm going to report it to you again. If you take the average return that you made on your stocks. This is the average return from 1960 to 2000. You made 5%. But the inflation rate was 4.8%, so your net was 0.2% compounded from 1960 to 2000, which was more than eaten up by the capital gain tax. So you had a net loss. That's what it boils down to. I can't ever picture a time or remember a time when stocks and bonds ever made money, but, you know, I could be wrong about that. I was wrong one other time in my life. I thought I'd report that to you. Now, economists call this the opportunity cost. If you go to McDonald's for dinner, you can't also go to Burger King because you only have money and time enough for one dinner. Opportunity cost is the hypothetical loss you suffer by investing in whatever performs second best. Another word for opportunity cost may be invidious comparison. That is a comparison calculated to incite envy. It only serves to make you look at the opportunity that you missed and to fill you with regret and silly covetousness. Now, you know, you didn't invest in gold in 2000, and so you invested in stocks and you lost money. Now, common sense would say, well, okay, I've already lost this much, so why don't I cut my losses here? Because the stock market's going lower, and gold and silver are going higher. Real estate is going lower. Now, it is true that there is always going to be some stock that is going to be making money while the rest are losing. And it is true that there always will be some pieces of real estate in America that are appreciating or going up in value while others are going down. But the primary trend is your friend. Always remember that. I learned that here from Franklin Sanders. He said, the primary trend is your friend. So that's the wrong use of the idea. The question opportunity cost ought to cause you to ask this. Of all those investments actually available to me, which will offer the greatest return? Somebody in the world might have increased his money 75% last year by investing in commercial real estate properties worth $10 million or more. However, it's pointless to compare your performance with some investment that only managers of zillion-dollar hedge funds can buy, unless you have a zillion dollars. So look at the investment that you really might have missed. How much money do you have to invest? Well, every month you've got so much money to invest in stocks and bonds. That means you've got so much money to invest in gold and silver, or so much to invest in wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Now, a businessman, he buys inventory, and he works on what we call the 2% principle. You always want to remember this one, children. Tuck this one away in your heart. The ordinary businessman buys inventory, and he spends a dollar for the inventory, and then he sells the inventory for $2. Can you follow that? You buy it for $100 and you sell it for $200. You buy it for $1,000 and sell it for $2,000. You buy it for $10,000 and sell it for $20,000. I call that the 2% principle. You buy it for a dollar and sell it for two, and you make it on that 2% spread. Can you follow that now? I had a Jewish guy one time. He called me on the telephone. He was all excited. He said, "Oh, Mr. Gordon, you got your percentages wrong. You got your decimal in the wrong place." And he explained that to me. Actually explained it to my wife, who explained to him that he was getting into higher finance there, getting into college. And that we didn't understand that higher finance, and we're just going to keep it simple. They buy it for a dollar and sell it for two. It's called the Keystone Markup. That's why I said in the last program, I said, hell, I wouldn't get out of bed for 5%. If you offered me an investment that returned 5% guaranteed every year for the next 40 years, I'd laugh at you. I'd laugh at you. So would any other businessman. Now, there are a lot of business boys out there. There are a lot of business boys and business girls. There are very few businessmen and businesswomen out there that can actually count. That's why I'm suggesting that you get a copy of the Money Changer. I don't know what Franklin charges. I think it's $120 a year or something like that. $100 a year. Looking for a price on here and I don't see it. Anyway, Sanders is one of the few guys that I can recommend. One of the few people that I can say, hey, listen, this guy can add, subtract, multiply, and divide. This guy can count. And he can tell you where the bear does it and where the rubber meets the road. Now, there's a few other guys out there. You know, Don McIlvaney's one. I've got a lot of respect for Don. I know, you know, and Robert Chapman's another one. Richard Dottie is a third. And there's just all kinds of guys out there that, you know, they've got their heads on straight and can count. But when you compare them to the myriad of people that have been to the business schools and have degrees after their names, and they're out here selling this advice and telling you to buy stocks and bonds and one thing and another, which are dead losers. Comparatively speaking, there's not very many people left out here that can count anymore. So let me give you the name and number. This is called The Money Changer. And The Money Changer is published by Franklin Sanders. Money Changer, that's the name of the newsletter, and by Franklin Sanders, and they're in West Point, Tennessee. I'm going to give you his phone number, because the best thing to do is just call him on the phone. Say, hey, you, I heard about you on the radio, I heard about you on the internet, and I would like to subscribe to your paper, or I'd like to ask you some questions, or I'd like to chit-chat or talk with you for a minute. Have you got a minute? Old Frank, he's a pretty nice guy. He's an old man like me. And then he'll probably sit there and chit-chat. He does with me. I've called him a time or two on the phone. I don't call him too often. I don't want to waste his time, you know, with my silly questions. But, you know, once in a while I'll call him up and say, hey, Franklin, can you answer this question for me? And his number is 888. Write this down. It's 888-218-9226. Again, that number is 888-218-9226. And this is the November 2006 Money Changer. It's called Ugly Investing. The ugly truth is that your IRA and your Krogh plans and all the stocks and bonds that you've got lose money. Just like all that airplane gas that you're burning up. That's not an investment. That's a dead loss. It's a lot of fun. I hope you're having fun investing in stocks and bonds. If you're having fun, keep with it. Shucks, if you're having a good time. I went into the coin store the other day and I spent a couple $100 buying coins. God, I just had a hell of a time. I said, hey, give me that 1908S Liberty Quarter over there. And I paid $8 for it. Oh, God, I just excited. And I got one of them was $30. I spent $30 on a 50-cent piece. What do you think of that for an investment? I spent $30 on a 50-cent piece. The coin broker was ecstatic. I paid 60 times more than I can spend it for. I mean, if I went into some store, put that on the counter, they'd take it for 50 cents. If you have money, if you have a good time collecting coins or burning airplane gas or smoking cigars, do it by all means. Have a good time. Burn the candle at both ends and enjoy life. Now, if you want to invest, that is, if you want to put $100 into something and make $100 on it, then you got to do something different. And so all of these guys are all unanimous. There isn't a single one of these guys that I'm going to tell you about here that's going to recommend that you buy stocks. So if that's bad news to you, well then turn the radio dial. Don't listen to this. Sure as hell don't want to listen to bad news. But the Money Changer, I recommend highly, and it costs you $100, and right away somebody's going to say, well, oh my God, I could buy my newspaper subscription, only costs me $25 a year. Well, you get what you pay for. You get what you pay for. Now, the media, nice guys that they are, all of the media in this country are owned by five companies, five corporations, five elitists like Robert Murdoch. And they're going to tell you what they want you to hear. They're going to tell you about how good stocks and bonds are because that's what they're selling. I don't blame them. Hell, I'd be selling stocks and bonds too if I was a stockbroker. I'd be calling you on the phone telling you how great them stocks are. Now, how smart you're going to be by buying more of them. Of course, I ain't selling stocks and bonds. I don't sell gold and silver either. So, sometimes people call here and they say, well, Mr. Gordon, you've convinced me. I want to buy some gold. Where do I send my money? I tell them, go to the Yellow Pages and go find somebody. I know of some brokers, but the brokers that I deal with won't deal with you anyway because they don't know you. And when you go out there, like as not, you'll probably deal with some fraud or charlatan out there, and he'll steal your money selling you gold just as fast as the stockbroker will steal your money selling you stocks. You know, and if you call me, I might give you a recommendation, you know, but you don't get a broker just by going to the Yellow Pages. So if you want to make money on gold and silver, I think that that's the place to park your money. That's my personal opinion, you know, because I've been around for a while and I've been watching this, and so far it's proven out. But, you know, shucks, I've still got $15 silver that I bought back in 1980. And the price of silver hasn't gone back to $15 yet. And I'm sure you're sitting there saying, uh-huh, see, I got my stocks. Well, if you had your stocks from 1980 to today, you lost money. I still have my silver. My silver's still over here in my hole in the ground. I still got it. What'd you do with your stocks? And then if you still got them, then the purchasing power on them is less. But I think the purchasing power on my silver is going to go up. It was $50.79. I think it'll be $50 or $100 again here in the future. And Sanders is the number one bull on silver. And he publishes a book on arbitrage using silver and gold. I've been doing that for quite a few years. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it until he said, well, that's what you're doing there, Gordon. It's called arbitrage. I said, oh, that's what that is. I was too damn dumb to know what the hell I was doing. But this guy can explain it to you, and I'll give you his number one more time. It's 888-218-9226. Guy's name is Franklin Sanders, publishes The Money Changer. And I have never seen a time that The Money Changer didn't return 10 times the $100 that it cost to buy it. Never. I've known this guy for 30 years. I don't ever remember that the subscription price would produce less than 10 times what it cost to buy it. This article right here, just this one article, if you read it and paid attention and you stopped buying stocks and spent your money down at Hemingway's buying dinner, you'd be money ahead. You'd make 10 times the subscription price to the Money Changer if you spent the money on airplane gas. That's why I suggest to you that you get a subscription. And hey, old Frank ain't paying me a dime to plug his newsletter. But every once in a while, I got to have something to say. And so I like to go to the newsletters. And this week, I'm going to talk to you about recession, the R word. You want to avoid recession. You want to get the hell out of stocks and bonds. All right. Well, I got to leave it right there. We'll be talking about recession here next time on The Law Hour, an editorial review. So let me remind you that that's what you're listening to is The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling site, the webpage, the homeschooling page, at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time. Same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.